My Mac Podcast 125. Looks like Leopard's not coming out anytime soon.
It looks like it's going to be October.
Trick or treat.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
Okay.
And yet spring still hasn't shown up here in Michigan, Chad. I'm getting a little sick of the snow.
But at least the 3 inches we got yesterday is pretty much melted away now.
Yeah, thanks to all the rain that we're getting now. So I am Tim Robertson. I'm here with Chad Perry in Battle Creek, Michigan. In Virginia, we have Guy Searle. Hi, Guy.
Hey.
Here so, again. I really wasn't expecting much Mac news this week. And, wow, it's coming out of our ears. And right before we started recording the show, an hour and a half ago, Apple releases up on their Hot News website, which is apple.com/hotnews, 10.5, Apple's latest and greatest
Leopard.
It's pushed back to October.
Well, you know, the really big news is that spring is now officially at its end in October.
That's right, yeah. Apple got their way, so they could still say it's going to be released this spring. The United States government has now said spring doesn't end until the end of October.
It was nice of them to make that little...
That's daylight savings doesn't until the end of October.
Okay, yeah. Some of the press release says the iPhone contains the most sophisticated software ever shipped on a mobile device, and finishing it on time has not come without a price. We had to borrow some key software engineers and Q&A resources from our Mac OS X team, and as a result, we will not be able to release Leopard at our Worldwide Developers Conference in early June as planned. While Leopard's features will be complete by then, we cannot deliver the quality release that we and our customers, that would be us, expect.
And demand.
We now plan to show our developers a near-final version of Leopard at the conference. Give them a beta copy to take home, which will immediately be posted on all the torrent sites, so they can do their final testing and ship Leopard in October. I think that's kind of interesting. It's, how many months late is that? About 4 months. So, you know, that's really not that big a deal.
No.
You know?
Well, also, you know, I mean, you had all the Windows people that kept complaining that, Apple comes out with a new OS every year, that $129 update, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, now it's over 2 years.
2 years. So, it's going to be over 2 years since Tiger.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, Tiger's been rock solid, and I'm still happy with Tiger.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing about Tiger that I'm going, God, I can't quite say that. There are some things that are vexing me a little bit. But other than that, I mean, don't be vexed, Tim. So that's the big news of the week. Thanks for listening. Oh, no. I guess we should probably go longer, huh?
Yeah. Okay. We can stretch this out a little bit since we're 3 minutes into the show.
Good night, everybody. So what have we got on the news tap? What's going on?
Well, let's go with, here's one we've got. Rumors of Apple Music subscription service.
Uh-oh.
Yep. Several folks in the media have said that Apple is going to embrace a subscription service.
They're predicting in the next 6 months we're going to see an iTunes Music Store subscription service.
Yeah, yep. Okay.
I said the same thing
about Intel, so what do I know?
Yeah.
That'll never happen!
Let's talk about that for a minute, because... go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think part of the problem with subscription services, let's face it, it really hasn't been that popular.
Well, it hasn't been that popular because none of the other stores that have a subscription-based service supports the iPod.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's buying the iPod. If you could buy an iPod and use it as easily with the Zune Music Store or eMusic or any of those places... eMusic is one of them, or Napster. Let's use Napster. If you can use an iPod as easily with Napster, and Napster was as easy to use as the iTunes Music Store, would you be interested in using Napster if it cost you, say, $15 a month, or even, let's say, $20 a month? Mm-hmm. All you can eat, buffet music, with the same catalog that's in the iTunes Music Store right now, and it would work with your iPod. Well, not your iPod, because your iPod's dead, but...
Right. If your iPod,
I think, you know, if you're only asking $15 or $16 a month, probably the average person spends at least that much.
You think so?
Well,
so.
You know, maybe not. I don't spend that much. But if you're an avid music fan and you buy, you know, 10 songs a month from iTunes.
I tell you what, I was just last night browsing the iTunes music store because I really wanted to get some new music on my iPod.
Mm-hmm.
And my 60 gig iPod is quickly getting filled up. Of course, like 10 gigs of that is podcast stuff.
Right.
So, I need to get in there and
clear those out.
Yeah. But still, I wanted some new music to listen to. And even with 5,000 plus songs on my iPod, I still want new stuff. I don't mm-hmm. want to hear, you know, Everything She Does Is Magic by the Police so many times in a row on my shuffle.
Right.
It wasn't their best album setting. Anyway.
No. But, so I'm sitting there browsing, and I'll listen to a couple little clips, and that sounds okay, but I don't know if I want to spend $10 for that album or even 99 cents for that one song.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just move on. Maybe I'll come back. But I usually forget which song I was listening to, and mm-hmm. I ended up not buying anything. If I had the opportunity, either by credit card or PayPal like they accept now,
mm-hmm.
to have a subscription service where I can just go click get song,
mm-hmm.
and I can listen to it as much as I want, as long as I keep mm-hmm. paying that money.
Right.
Man, there was a lot of stuff I probably would have
downloaded.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and because Apple both sells the music and the hardware and the software, how difficult would it be for Apple that if you really liked a song, you just click the little button that says buy it, and instead of just having it as part of your subscription service,
mm-hmm.
it's now your song. I think that would work extremely well.
Yeah, I think the only way that would work would be if you were a subscriber to the iTunes music subscription service, that you got some kind of discount on songs that you were interested in buying.
I
couldn't think of any reason why otherwise I would even want it. Most of what I listen to on my iPod are podcasts.
Well, but let's assume though with the music. Well, you're probably not the average demographic teenager that's using his iPod to listen to music either.
Yeah, that's right. Get off my lawn, sonny.
But you can't use any of the subscription music in your iMovies or any other iLife applications.
No,
you'd probably be DRM protected. You couldn't use it on anything but listening to it in iTunes or on your iPod.
Right.
So and for that would matter, Apple would have to come up with yet another kind of DRM scheme.
And that's what I was thinking myself. What are they going to do for DRM on this? I mean, here
can't
last week we're talking about EMI, releasing.
But this is different. That's buying true. Music that's right. not copy protected. This is a totally different business model, and I think it's one that Apple would really really find profitable for them. I think more people than not would sign up for a subscription service in iTunes, especially if it was priced accordingly. And I think anything over $20 US, $19.99, anything above that is too much. Anything below that, I think they're hitting their target market.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be more expensive than what's already available.
Yeah.
I wouldn't touch iPod, it myself.
I would be all over it. In fact, I might even buy a second iPod just to have my subscription music on that.
For your subscription music. Hey.
Right. Absolutely. Why not? You know? If I've got a 60 gig iPod right now. How much can I put on there already? Not much, because it's almost full. But mm-hmm. I would love to be able to listen to new music that is subscription based.
Well,
just sync it to a different iPod.
How long is your commute every day?
Well, that's not even nothing. It's very short.
Well, so is mine.
But
which is why I typically just listen to podcasts.
Podcasts, right? But I don't want to listen to a podcast every day. After a while, that gets a little boring. I'm like, I want to jam out to something.
Right.
And I don't want to jam out, to Sugar Cult again.
Mm-hmm.
I like it, but I want to hear something different, something new. And if I could just go in and get this, listen to them, and when I find a song I really dig, end up buying it.
Well, didn't Imus just come out with some kind of rap song? Oh, wait.
Yeah, he did. He did. He's going to be rapping to himself. Well, we're going to actually talk about the IMS situation in a little bit, too. Let's move on to the next story. What do you got, Guy?
Mac sales slowing before Leopard 10.5 is released. That seems kind of redundant, considering that Leopard won't be released until October now.
Yeah.
But in the last quarter, there were some signs that, especially the laptops, were that their sales have slowed somewhat. Some analysts have said that they believe that the combination of Adobe's CS3 Photoshop suite, which is, of course, you know, the first that's a universal binary, and Apple's release of the new OptiCore Mac Pro will boost sales in the next quarter, no matter if Apple lets Leopard out or not. And I guess we'll see, since Apple won't be released until, what is that, is that the first quarter, 08, October? Is that still in...
I think it's still in 2007. I think that's towards the end, but I could be mistaken. I'm not sure. I don't know what fiscal quarter Apple's in right now. Yeah. So,
well, they're in the. I think they're
honestly,
in the second
I'm not a stockholder.
No, they're
so
in
I
the third
care.
Quarter right now.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not a stockholder, so I don't care. I can't afford to be one. Speaking of iTunes, you see that MGM, United Artists, is allowing their movies to be sold through the iTunes Music Store now.
Oh yeah,
didn't see.
Yeah, no. So we can go get Rocky right now.
Oh,
I don't think any of the Bond flicks have been released yet, though.
No, Dances with Wolves, Mad Max, The Thomas Crown Affair, which actually is a good movie.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And they're all being sold in the infamous 640 by 480 near DVD quality resolution.
I love that term.
It's still perplexing to me.
Yeah,
Apple TV is on the market, and Apple's not supporting how high of a resolution it can.
Right, which play. We established is what 1080i.
Yeah, it's crazy. Why can't I get those type of movies?
Because they don't sell them yet.
Yeah, well, in a related story, and I got this too. iTunes podcasting team sends out recommendations for video. Apple's iTunes podcasting team has sent out a new standards for those who do video podcasts. They now say that video should be 640 by 480 to show up better on widescreen TVs with Apple's TV. And still be compatible with the fifth generation iPods with video. So in other words, Apple's saying, hey, you know what? Make your videos better so it looks better on the Apple TV.
Well, yeah, but they you know, if you actually go to the site and look at it, you know, they say, well, some people may not want to do it for, you know, bandwidth sizes or whatever.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Would actually host those files.
No, you don't want that though. No. Because then you put Apple in a position that they could control your content. And I don't want anybody to control my content, do you? The only person that should be in charge of my content is my wife and myself.
Oh, is that what you call it now?
Yeah, well, you know, got to have euphemisms that are clean.
Yeah.
God. Hey, check out my content. I've honey, never seen such content before.
Honey, you want to come upstairs and review my content before bed?
Oh, not again.
Oh, I'm going to find errors.
No, I think you can do your own proofreading tonight.
Speaking of media centers, which is really what the Apple TV is, Chad, what do you got?
Apple has published a patent for a new media center interface. And basically, it says that this patent is for a more fully featured media center and interface. It's called a multimedia center for computing systems.
Synergy.
That is this just rolls off the tongue like silk, doesn't it?
Yep. The patent calls for a modular control element, remote control, to control various devices and programs, allowing them to be used via a plug-in software module, while giving the end user a consistent front-end interface.
Oh, who wants that?
I know. Yeah. I want the confusing crap myself.
And this is not front row. It is actually for a hardware device. So
that would be Apple TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Apple has filed so many patents lately that I don't know if this really means anything or they're just going to improve the experience of the Apple TV eventually. I think so.
Oh, well, they're not just going to sit on it.
Didn't you see a news story, Guy, about upgrading the Apple TV? Didn't I read something about that in your notes for the show?
Oh,
look on the last page.
I can't find it.
It's on the last page. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
As the host, I'm making a jump all over the place.
The light bulb just came on. Weak Knees announces Apple TV upgrade kit with a 160-gigabyte hard drive and all the tools needed to replace the existing drive. Now you can void your warranty for only $199.
Basically, what they do, they send you a 160-gigabyte 2.5-inch drive, some Torx screwdrivers, detailed instructions. They give you a, what is it, a six-month warranty?
So they give you a warranty with it.
And they offer extensive forums, telephone support, and email support.
Wow.
And it is $200. I mean, that's, you know, That's two-thirds the cost of the Apple TV.
Right.
But, but I'm not quite sure what all that includes. Is it just a bigger hard drive? Are they putting different codecs on there so you could play different video files?
Well, if they are, they're not saying.
Well, did you read the news report that Apple has publicly stated that they are not going to upgrade the Apple TV in any way that will break any of the hacks that people are doing to the Apple TV? In effect, Apple is saying, oh, heck,
knock yourselves out, guys.
Here's our base platform. Do our R&D for us, and we'll buy the things we like best.
Yeah.
That's really what it boils down to.
Well, sure, they're gonna keep an eye out on the internet, see what the most popular hacks are, see what people are doing to the Apple TV, and you know darn well they're gonna include them in a future version.
Sure.
Why wouldn't they?
Yep.
And what do they care if people are hacking the crap out of
them? As long as they're buying them.
But that's exactly right. And unlike Sony with the PSP, who... The hacker community went after the PSP hard and heavy. They wanted to play homebrew games on it and old ROMs like Mac MAME kind of stuff. Yep. They wanted to play all these older games, and they wanted to do other stuff with the PSP. Sony keeps releasing firmware updates that break all of these hacks, so Sony can control everything when it comes to the PSP, which is really stupid.
Yep.
Apple, on the other hand, is saying, heck, we don't care, just... Hack it to death.
as long as
you're buying it. Exactly. Yeah. So I think Apple is absolutely on the right track here.
Oh, yeah.
Let people hack it.
Mm-hmm.
I would
open source hardware. Sweet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a real smart move.
I do too.
And that's the sort of thing, and that's the sort of attitude that Apple has to have if they really want the Apple TV to be successful.
Well, not just the Apple TV, but you know, whatever consumer electronic.
Here's a question. As we know from the beginning of the show when I was talking about macOS 10.5 being delayed till October, because they literally took some engineers off the macOS 10.5 team and put them on the iPhone team, because, as Steve Jobs said in the Macworld Expo keynote, as we both know, Guy, we were sitting there in the audience, and Chad was working. he'll be there next year.
He was there in spirit.
He was there in spirit.
I was.
That's right.
We killed him before we left.
The iPhone literally runs macOS 10.5. Well, 10 point whatever.
Whatever it's going to be.
Right.
Yeah.
But it runs 10 point...
Mac
Mini X.
Yeah. Mini X. But I don't even think it's that mini. I think it's got most of the features as 10.5.
But does it go when you start it up?
When you start it up, unfortunately, no.
Oh, nice.
We also know that the Apple TV also runs macOS 10, right?
Mm-hmm. They've actually hacked it to kind of make a cheap Mac. I don't know how
it's a very cheap Mac. Well, it does everything except for, you know, you couldn't play games on it or anything. Well, unless you're talking emulation, then sure.
Right.
But, I mean, you can install programs and everything on
Pong.
It. It'll do just about everything, including browsing the internet.
Mm.
So... When we talk about installed base and market share, which I really don't give a crap about whatever their market share is. We've talked about it on the past shows, what their market share is this, that, and blah, blah, blah.
Because it doesn't correlate to profitability.
No,
Does it correlate to a good user experience.
Right, or popularity.
Mm-hmm.
So, that being said, does Apple get to include sales of each iPhone and Apple TV as a Mac sale? It's running Mac. What is the Mac? Is the Mac just the computer? Obviously not.
Mm-hmm.
It is the software and the hardware, right?
Right.
So couldn't they say every iPhone sold has increased the Mac market share? Couldn't they say this exactly the same thing about the Apple TV?
Well, I mean, Windows does the same thing with all the
Windows
devices that are out there. You know, every single
smartphone.
Well, not so much the smartphone.
Well,
But every single ATM that you know
runs Windows
or every single kiosk somewhere that's you know basically it's just a dumb device, but it's running Windows, so they count that as a Windows set.
Absolutely, they
do. But what if the whole point of going from Apple Computers to Apple Inc. was to be able to rename the Mac an Apple Computer, and then you've also have the Apple Consumer Electronics?
Could be. But they're really pushing that these devices are running the Mac OS.
Right.
That the Mac OS isn't just for a desktop or a laptop computer anymore. And here's another question. How long before a new version and this is why I don't think we've seen a major update to the iPod line in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
What if the next version of the iPod runs Mac OS X?
Well, so all of a sudden, I think if everything that we are expecting from the next iPod comes to be, it's going to have to, because there's no way. You know, one of the things that I think we all kind of would expect is some Wi-Fi connectivity and some internet browsing capability.
Right,
in the next
and there's
iPod.
No way they're going to do that with the iPod OS as it stands right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you're absolutely right that the next version of the iPod is going to be running 10 point blank, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, basically at that point, Mac OS share goes up 100 million users.
Yeah, well, let's think about that for a minute, though. Seriously.
Because now I don't have to sync my iPod to download music. I can go online and get it right from the iTunes Music Store right off my iPod.
Right, exactly. So how much, though, think about that. How much do you really need your Macintosh if your phone is also an iPod? Plus,
that's
you want
what they're
a bigger
gonna do.
One.
Plus, yeah, that's
your
what they're going to do.
Convergence.
Think about though. Think about how much impulse buying you or I would do sitting
on a bus,
sitting in a restaurant, sitting in an airport, thinking, "God,
well,
I'm going to be here for 2 hours. Why don't I just download the lost episode that I missed?"
Right. Well, there's a subscription base for you too.
Yep.
You're listening to a song, you go, you know what? I really like this song. I want the full unlocked version that's in better. It's 256 instead of the 128 DRM version.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, $1.30. Click. It's done right there on the iPod.
Yep.
The next time you sync it with your Mac,
it goes over.
It unlocks it.
Yeah.
Right. So, I think that's so. Look at it this way: Apple goes from a 5.6 market share.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 years later, they've got a 40, no, more than that. Are you kidding? For each iPhone and iPod and Apple TV?
Okay, well, look at it this way. It's taken them,
they go to a 40% market share.
5 years to sell 100 million iPods.
Right.
So you're looking at,
Well, but you can't say it's taken 5 years because, they got half those sales in the last year alone.
Well, that's
right?
True. It has ramped up.
Yeah, so it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger as far as numbers go.
Much like your content.
So,
sorry.
So all of a sudden, they're looking at a 35 to 40% market share for the Mac OS. Now, when analysts look at that, and they look at, Windows has 70% market share, and Apple has 30% market share. That looks a lot better than 5.5% market share, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes stockholders or potential stockholders happy, which makes Apple more profitable. I think this is a win-win situation for Apple. I think they're really on the right track here.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just something I wanted to bring up, that I don't really care about market share. I almost kind of like that they have a small market share simply
under the
because,
radar.
Because we kind of feel special.
Yeah.
Anything else going on? Other than the two new Get a Mac commercials, have you guys seen both of those yet?
Yeah, I love the computer cart one.
Yeah,
yeah.
With John Hodgman, because you've got whoever hasn't seen it. There's basically John Hodgman as PC, and there's three other PC guys there on the cart with him. And the one that's kind of laying down on the cart on the bottom is like, "Oh, I've got this kind of error." And then
no, he never even talks.
Oh, he never talks. Okay, you're right.
They tell him, he's got a
fatal error. And then PC's like, "Don't worry about it, buddy. You'll be just fine." And then in kind of an aside to Justin Long, he's like, "He's a goner.
He's a goner." Yeah, that's. I like the other one.
The
too.
The flashback to the kids, kind of surprised me because I'm like, where are they going with this thing? They have a little flashback.
That was cute. I liked it.
Pull out that calculator.
Did you see the Apple TV commercial?
I haven't seen that yet.
I actually saw that on TV last night.
Yeah, I saw it. My wife fast forwarded through it.
Well, is that available? Is that available at the Apple Store?
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to see if I can find.
Well, not the Apple Store. You mean Apple website?
Yeah, that too.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, it says your blah, blah, blah on your iPod and or on your computer or on your iPod and now on your TV. It's really to the point, pow, 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 and they use the clip from, what is that movie, School of Rock.
Yep.
So it was. I thought it was very effective, and I was like, hey, cool, they're actually advertising this new thing.
Yeah.
Which they really need to do. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if they're going to hit as hard as they do with iPod commercials. Although, have you seen any new iPod commercials in a while? I haven't.
No.
Because there's not any new iPods to push.
Yeah,
but they're still selling the previous gen like they're going out of style. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have to advertise, then save your money for something else.
No, you need to advertise.
Well, they're at a critical
mass.
Yeah, where
no,
everybody
you still
knows
advertise.
About it.
Yeah, but you still advertise.
Should still advertise, but typically just when you've got something really to talk about. And at this point, they're just repeating the same stuff they've been saying for the last year with the full-size iPod.
Now, we talked about the Hello commercial for the iPhone.
Right. Mm-hmm.
How soon until you see some new commercials from the iPhone? And do you think the iPhone should have commercials kind of like the iPod, where it's a silhouette dancing, then all of a sudden it rings and he stops and talks for a second, and then he keeps dancing? I think that would work pretty well.
That would be cool.
That would work real well. And
you said the silhouette dancing, you cannot get paid for it.
I know it. You see the silhouette dancing as you normally do, right? Mm-hmm. And then the phone rings and it goes to the actual person instead of just the silhouette and the color. Boom! It's somebody standing there and he answers the phone. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Well, you know how that would work even better?
I'm in the middle of an important meeting, and then click, and then it goes back to the silhouette, and he's dancing again. That would be super
right.
effective.
You still got the silhouette. Like you still got the psychedelic
iTunes
background.
Or whatever it was, so.
Okay, you both were talking exactly at the same time.
Yes, we were.
Go ahead, Chad.
They kind of had a commercial like that, though, when they first put iTunes on, was it Singular?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where the guy was like out walking through the tunnel and his shadow was dancing and jamming
down. Oh,
then
it stopped. Yeah, you're right. They did do something like that. Yeah. That was kind of lame, though.
Mm-hmm.
What were you saying, guy?
Well, I was going to say, in this particular case, you still have like the psychedelic background. You still have the silhouette and, the silhouette's still dancing up a storm. And all of a sudden the phone rings and it cuts over and you see some guy in like a three-piece business suit in the middle of a city somewhere just talking. And then, like, 2 seconds later, after he hangs up, it like, quickly switches back to the psychedelic background, and he's, the silhouette dancing up a storm. But for the silhouette, you have the guy, like, in dreads or something, and it just, like, switches from this kind of weird, freaky image of somebody with, like, long hair or whatever to some middle-aged guy standing there talking on the phone and then switching back again.
So, long hair... Freaky guy,
and then
older guy.
Hey.
You kind of qualify for both of those.
Yeah,
right?
I know. I'm the new guy.
I'm wearing a tie now at work. Damn you, internet.
So we've got some new content up at mymac.com. Obviously, this podcast, a lot of people think that we do the podcast and that's our focus. Actually, our focus is at mymac.com. The podcast is part of mymac.com. Well, I don't want to say secondary. It's part of the offerings of mymac.com.
Mm-hmm.
Russ Walkowicz has a review of the new Toast 8 from Roxio. He gives it a 4 out of 5.
Mm.
Some good comments underneath it. David Cohen basically says, wow, you guys really, every Mac user should own Toast. Speaking of David Cohen, he is back on this week's show.
Dandy.
Can't wait to hear what he has to say. He's going to be talking about Adobe, their contributions to cross-platform computing, like PDF, DNG, that sort of thing, and their current cross-platform approach to software products. I mean, Adobe's one of the biggest companies in the world when it comes to software, and they got to support both the Mac and the PC, so... I'm looking.
Well, actually,
what David
they don't have to. I'm just happy that they do.
Mm-hmm. Well, or PC users should be happy that they do.
Yeah.
and that's my story. Also, we had a bonus podcast this week. It's called Guy at Apple Pie.
Oh, that's
did you notice that was posted? Guy did something really weird.
What
however,
did he, do?
He recorded it and encoded it when I was putting it up on the site.
Mm-hmm.
If you listened and. If you downloaded it and listened to it, it was fine. If you got it through the iTunes Music Store or podcast listing, it was fine. You could listen to it on your iPod, it was fine. But if you actually played it in the little audio player on our website, it was sped up and...
Really?
Yeah. It drove me crazy. I went 3 or 4 different ways trying to get it working right, and it just would not work. What I eventually had to do, Guy...
Was put it was back
drop
in GarageBand?
The MP4 that you sent me... Or, no, you sent an M4... Whatever.
M4A.
Yeah. I had to bring that into GarageBand, re-export it, And that finally worked, but it was crazy.
Oh, man, I would have liked to have heard that.
Well, here you go.
Oh, wow, that's cool. So I talk fast and high. Excellent.
It was cracking me up. And until I got it fixed, I was just going into the article. I left it up on the site, but I was changing the date to 1999 so nobody would see it until I finally got it working. Then I changed the date to 2007. It popped up on the page. John Nemirovsky has a review of the Maxtor OneTouch 3 Mini 160 gig hard drive.
Yep.
Donnie's got a new thumbnails. Create your own Apple event.
You know, as soon as I saw that, for some reason I was thinking South Park. You could cut all those little pieces out.
Yeah, I know.
Just to, you know, put it in GarageBand or Soundtrack and or LiveType, you know, and just make your own little Steve Jobs keynote. Anime.
Donnie's also got Maxpiration number 80, Safari, your internet control center.
Hey.
And Artie, we've got a review of a U-Suit protective case for the MacBook.
Yeah.
And he kind of says in that review, that's a very crowded market, and good luck to the people that made this. It doesn't really stand out from reading his review, so.
Yeah.
What's going on the rest of the show? Like I said, what's going on with David Cohen? And we've got a review of the Megillia TV Mini from Robert.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a Book Bites Live this week, so hopefully Nemo will come through next week with a new one, because I really enjoy listening to his author reviews. But before we wrap it up here, I got an IM. I don't want to say from who, but it was from one of our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't recognize the name. So it was somebody that they knew what my iChat name was.
Mm-hmm. Mr.
Bojangles? DS9-2. And they sent me an IM, and he asked me, hey, Tim, as a podcaster, what do you think of the Don Imus situation? And I thought, well, what's that got to do with me? You know, what's that got to do with Max? But in a way, it does have something to do with us. We are broadcasters to a certain extent.
Yeah.
We broadcast over the internet. And we don't really have a parent company, per se. I am the parent company.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what Mr. Imus would be doing for a while.
Yeah. And they wanted to know what I thought about it. And did I think it was right for him to get fired? And honestly, I hadn't really been following the story too much. So I did a little bit of research before I came over here. And I thought, you know, it's not Mac related, but I did want to touch on this. Now, for those who don't know, Don Imus has a morning radio show.
Yep.
Kind of like Howard Stern or Bob and Tom in the Morning.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Imus in the Morning?
Imus in the Morning. Yep.
I never.
Out of WFAN in New York. I used to.
Don't shake your thing there, Chad. It's moving my mic. I've never listened to it.
Used to listen to it back in the mid 90s. I haven't listened to it since then, though.
Yeah. It's.
I only listen to it when I need a good night's sleep.
Yeah. Put you out, huh?
Yeah.
That is also broadcast over TV.
On MSNBC.
Right. Yep. Which is weird, because the radio station, I think, is owned by CBS.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
And if we can just watch ABC into that somehow.
So, basically, he was talking about a basketball game, women's college basketball game.
Team.
And he was referring to the players, who are all black players.
Well, all but two of them.
But he called them nappy-headed hoes. And
yeah, no one's going to notice that.
Yeah. So I did a little bit of research, and CNN, who is always happy to exploit anything like this, has a nice little chronological, here's some other things that's been said on his show. When the New York Times hired a black journalist in the 1990s, Ima said it was nice of the paper to let the cleaning lady cover the White House.
Ooh.
He also called a Times reporter, columnist, William C. Roden, a quota hire. Imus called Washington Post media reporter Howard Kurtz a boner-nosed, beanie-wearing Jew boy in 98. Also on his show in 2001, sports announcer Sid Rosenberg said he can't watch tennis players Venus and Sierra Williams because they are too masculine. He called Venus Williams an animal and said the sisters are more likely to be featured in National Geographic than Playboy. Rosenberg also called the U.S. women's soccer team Juiced Up Dykes. While watching Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat's funeral in 2004, Rosenberg referred to Palestinians as stinking animals and said they ought to drop the bomb right there, kill them all right now. while discussing an argument with his bosses last year, I must refer to the Jewish management at CBS Radio as money-grubbing bastards. So in other words, you have this radio show mm-hmm. with a bunch of old white guys
mm-hmm.
who are slandering the Anybody. Jews. They're slandering the Palestinians. They're slandering black people. And I'm reading online, some people are saying, well, you know what? He called them nappy-headed hosts. He didn't really mean that in the way that everyone's trying to make him out to be.
Well, how else could you interpret it?
You know what? I think you start looking at the history of the stuff, the vile, vile stuff that not just him, but other people on his mm-hmm. show, obviously, which means he condones mm-hmm. their behavior, has said on that show. And you start putting it together. These are a bunch of racist, insensitive, and we get the explicit tag again this week, assholes.
Mm-hmm.
And today, CBS Radio fired Imus. MSNBC stopped airing the radio show on their TV program.
As of last night.
Yeah. So Imus is completely without a job now. And some people are still saying that, oh, this is just overblown. Well, you know what? I don't think it is overblown. And if you want to be that insensitive to the rest of the human race, then I don't think you deserve a job speaking on the radio. I really don't. What do you guys think?
Well, you know, I've never been an Imus fan. I'm not, you know,
Isn't it really even about being an Imus fan?
I know, but I mean, at the same time, I don't listen to Howard Stern. I didn't particularly care for him when he was on the public airwaves. Most of these so-called shock jocks, I just don't really have any time for because I've got better things to be doing. And you know, if when I turn on the radio, what I want to hear is the music. So, you know, I mean, and all these guys are about controversy, you know, and whatever it is they have to do to get their name out there, because they're really not that relevant anymore, especially somebody like Imus, who, you know, is probably in his early 60s and looks about 20 years older than that. So, you know,
yeah, their time is coming up. Podcasting
radio in general is coming up.
Yeah.
But the point is, now, having said all that, it doesn't really bother me that CBS and MSNBC fired him, but at the same time, I can't recall anything in the U.S. Constitution that guarantees you or anyone the right to not be offended by something that somebody else says. But we do have, or what we're supposed to have, is freedom of speech. So right. He's certainly entitled to say the things that he wants to say, just as CBS and MSNBC are within their rights to say, you know what, you don't really fit our profile of what we're trying to do, so goodbye.
Well, and he doesn't have the right to say it on my show. He doesn't have a right to say it on the airwaves that CBS and NBC pay for.
Well, exactly.
And, yeah, I agree with you, Guy. And I also agree with the fact that shock jocks are an endangered species.
Yep.
That more and more people, as time goes on, are going to start getting their content
mm-hmm.
from the internet, from podcasting, so they can listen to the kind of content that they're interested in.
Right.
Like the show. Anybody mm-hmm. listening to the show right now obviously has an interest in Apple, Macintosh right. computers, iPods, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they listen to the show to get some news, to be entertained, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
If I started, you know, those kind of racial comments, I wouldn't be fired. This is my show.
Right.
I own it.
You can say pretty much whatever.
Our listenership want. Would certainly take a dive.
Yes, you know, we will lose our listenership.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not why I don't say stuff like that. I don't say stuff like that because it's just wrong and,
right.
and people
it's
that
stuff
think
that you
that
don't
way.
Agree
it's
with.
Just, mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. In a time when the world is not a very safe place for people right now. And let's be honest, it never has been.
Or for
always
puppies.
Strife going on.
Mm-hmm.
Or for puppies. to be this insensitive to entire races of people, entire groups of people, I say to hell with Don Imus and good luck with whatever you do. Good luck. I just don't want to hear you anymore. Not that I was listening anyway.
Right.
But
Well, the only part that the only real part that bothers me about the whole thing is the hypocrisy of the media in general. I mean, as soon as this happened, you could probably guess that, you know, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson were flipping a coin over who was going to take this one. And, you know, it's like, guys, you're coming out, you're going after some old, sick, stupid white guy. You know, when are you going to go after the rappers that have been saying the same stupid crap for the last 15 years?
Well,
you know, the fact that they're mostly black doesn't give them carte blanche to say this kind of nonsense, and it shouldn't. It's a double standard.
Nobody has to, yes and no, Guy, because nobody has to buy those CDs.
Well, nobody has to turn on the TV or the radio and listen to an idiot like I miss.
That's true. And by the same token, if that didn't sell, black rappers wouldn't be using the kind of language that you find objectionable, correct?
Oh, I'm not saying I find it objectionable. I think they should have the right to say or do, you know, as long as they're not physically hurting someone else, they should be able to say or do what they want. Like I said, freedom of speech. But, you know, when you have somebody of a high profile like Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton, you know, getting all up in arms about it, it's like, you know, just don't do it, because you're just making yourself look like a fool. It's obvious that they're doing it for the publicity. You know, the girls that are on the softball team, when it was brought up to them, they're like, who the hell's Don Imus?
Right. Basketball team, yeah.
What did I say?
It's softball.
Oh, did I say softball? Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm really up on things, aren't I? Basketball team, the Rutgers basketball team. And the reason, you know, congratulations on their superb win. Nobody thought that they would take the NCAA championship in basketball for women.
But
they didn't.
But they got into the championship game, which is what people didn't expect. But,
but the reason I bring it up is because we are new media. No question about it.
I'm sorry, Guy Searle's not here right now. Could you please leave a message?
We are the new media. We are what people are listening to. We didn't exist 5 years ago. The term podcasting didn't exist that long ago.
Right.
The rules are still being worked out. We don't play by the same rules that big media does.
We're rebels.
So you could have racial, sexist asses.
And you do.
Yep. In podcasts that you can listen to. So if you agree with those sick, twisted ideals, you have someone to listen to now. And while I don't agree with them, I'm glad that we have the freedoms to be able to produce the content that we want to. Now, obviously, we produce a show that we hope is positive and entertaining, that anybody would pretty much enjoy if they're into the same type of things that we are. But I think it's also important for us to look at what's going on in the mainstream media and not follow the same mistakes that are being made or have been made there in the past. And that's why I bring it up on this show. Because beyond being for Mac users, we're podcasting here, right?
Right.
And we want more people to listen. We want the people that are already listening to continue to listen, right? So we need to learn what they're doing wrong over there on the big media site and do it right here.
Well, and hopefully big media won't just come in and take the whole shebang over, kind of like what happened with, you know, blogs and the internet in general.
For any of the big media companies that are listening, please send any offers to buymymac.com and the mymac.com podcast to tim@mymac.com.
Dear Westwood One, if you're looking for someone to fill Imus' spot...
Tim, Guy, and Chad is interested.
That's right.
Please send us a voicemail at our Skype number, 1-801-938-5559.
I think I would look pretty good in a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
Go.
McDonald's, we're certainly your brother's salsa and
talking about your ranch.
I think we could fill 3 hours in the morning, don't you? And obviously, it wouldn't be about computers all the time or iPods or anything like that. But
right.
We're pretty diverse in our likes and dislikes. Dung bowling. All you have to do is pick your topic, what's going on in the news every day, and
rant away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Don't talk about women's basketball teams.
Have we talked about dung bowlers here yet?
No.
I think I just
haven't done anything with it yet.
Yeah, you just did. Anybody want to fill our listeners in?
I don't think nothing we're quite up there ready yet.
No, I think we're just going to have to wait until we actually post something.
So okay. No one can understand it. It's an inside yes. joke. Nobody else yeah. can get it.
No one go to dungbowlers.com. Don't go there. We do have a new sponsor starting up in beginning of next month.
Cool.
Really?
Who is it?
Audible.com is going to be sponsoring both MyMac.com and the MyMac.com podcast for the month of May.
Outstanding.
So don't go to Audible yet. Wait till we have the advertising up on our website, and then click our banners and go there.
Yeah, many, many times.
And this is going to be exclusive. They're the only company that we're going to be advertising at the top of the MyMac.com mm-hmm. website, and they're going to be, at least so far, the only advertiser on the podcast for the month of May.
Are they going to supply any content as far as, you know, commercials and the like, or is it just going to be us talking about it?
You know, I asked them, and I kind of got the impression that, yeah, they have commercials.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of gave the impression that, you know what? The commercials are cool, and it makes us sound professional, mm-hmm. but I think you'll probably have better luck if we can just talk about Audible mm-hmm. for a few minutes on each show.
Right.
And this is kind of a free advertising right now for them, but mm-hmm. Audible is actually a company that's been around a long time, and I really like what they offer.
Sure.
Audio books that you could download to your iPod and mm-hmm. listen. Great service. I mean, a lot of people... And May... What is it? It's going to come out in June, the new Harry Potter book.
Oh, yeah.
I guarantee you they're going to be selling a lot of unabridged copies of Harry Potter's new book up on Audible.
But Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Deathly Hallows.
Well, I've already got my copies. Pre-order in.
Well, my wife and I are both into the Harry Potter series of books, and she agrees that I am not going to let her read the copy before me, and I agree that she's not going to let me read the copy before her. So I think
we're
going to
buy two copies.
That's
going to say, you're just going to get a book and then just, like the old XFL, put it in the middle of a field and you both run for it?
No, I'll be
Well, I'll just
bastard.
Buy the extra off you, and I'll read the last one because I've never read any of the other ones. So at least I'll know how it ends.
You've never read any of them?
No.
No, I
wow.
haven't.
You got to read the Harry Potter series.
Really yeah, good. Everybody's told me that.
Or next month in May... Click a banner at mymac.com for Audible and just download the audiobooks. You got to get the unabridged, though. I mean, you really do. So anyways, that's our segment of the show. Coming up next, as I said, is going to be David Cohen, and we're going to finish the show with Robert Hazelrig. And we appreciate you guys downloading and listening to this podcast. This podcast is sponsored by mymac.com. Oh, no, not really.
Until next month.
Until Good. Next month. So what's the phone number,
Audible
Chad?
Sometime in the future.
1-801-938-5559 to leave us a message on Skype.
Call early, call often.
Yep.
We'd love to hear from you. We'll share your comments and suggestions on the show the next week after you call in. So for Guy and Chad, my name is Tim, and we'll see you next week.
Hello, my name is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. Welcome to Fenestration 28. I'd like to spend today's session following on from John Nemo's BookBytes interview with Ted Padova, the author of the PDF Bible. What I'd like to do is talk a little bit about some of the contributions Adobe has made over the years to cross-platform working between Mac and Windows. And that's something that remains the case today. PDF is a good starting point because it's a very good example. PDF stands for Portable Document Format, and it was specifically designed by Adobe to allow PostScript files to be passed between Windows, Macs, and any other system that supports the PDF format. The concept behind PDF is that any system can take a PDF file and can render it on the screen or to a printer, and it will always come out looking exactly the same. As such, it truly is a complete cross-platform solution for printed files. And you can see this today. You often will get product manuals now purely on disk in a PDF form. And that means that the manufacturer has taken the printed manual and has generated it as a PDF, and can be sure that whoever receives the file can open it in a PDF-compatible reader and will be able to see the file exactly as the manufacturer intended it. This is not always the case if you use different word processor formats, even if you use something like Microsoft Word. One of the problems with Word is the way it creates pages is they're actually created each time the document is open. Word itself does not have a true concept of a page, as a separate entity. All it has is the concept of the text, and laying that text out according to the dimensions of the document in which it's opened. Those of us here in the UK see this all the time when we receive documents that have been created by American users. Their documents in Word will have been formatted for letter format paper, which is a different size to the A4 format paper we tend to use for documents over here. Consequently, if you open up an American document on an English version of Word and change the page size to be A4 so that you can print it on a British printer, you'll find all the page breaks will move. This is not a problem with PDF, because PDF is designed to retain the layout and exact look of the system and the document as it was created, no matter what type of system you're opening it on. This cross-platform approach by Adobe, it principally comes from their background. They originally created their software for Macintoshes, and it was only much later into their life that they moved into the Windows area. Now, because of the prevalence of Windows over Mac, and the differences in market share, naturally their Windows product line is much more lucrative and successful for them than their Macintosh line. Despite this, they have consistently stuck with the Macintosh. And what's more, their programs are exactly the same on Windows or Macintosh. This is a real bonus that perhaps if you don't work in both fields or have experience of both of the software on both platforms, you might not appreciate. But the fact is that you can sit down with a copy of Photoshop CS2 on a Macintosh and spend some time learning how to use it. And then if you open up that same program on a Windows machine, you'll find it looks exactly the same. Obviously, there are some slight visual differences because of the fact that a Windows machine has a different GUI interface than the Mac does. But with everything that's within Adobe's control looks exactly the same. All the toolbars, all the palettes, all the dialog boxes will look pretty much the same as they do on one machine or another. Of course, this is quite a smart move by Adobe, because it does mean that their software is not only platform agnostic, but also user agnostic. In that they can guarantee that if you know Photoshop, then you know it, whether you're going to be using it on a Windows or a Mac. This pretty much applies to all the other programs in the CS2 suite, and will apply also for all the programs in the CS3 suite, which is just now hitting the streets. Taking a look at one of Adobe's other programs, their new Photoshop Lightroom software, they've taken this a step further. Photoshop Lightroom is designed to be a photography workflow application, and in terms of concepts, it's very similar to Apple's Aperture. The idea is that you take photos, whether they be from a digital SLR or a smaller handheld point-and-shoot camera, and you load them into Lightroom, and effectively that becomes a management interface for the photos. It's very good at storing photos, keywording photos, organizing photos. But what it can also do is many of the functions that you would do in Photoshop in terms of adjusting the levels, adjusting the contrast, adjusting red eye and that sort of thing. And it gives many of the very powerful tools that you'll find in a copy of Photoshop are available to you within Lightroom. What Photoshop doesn't have that Lightroom does, though, is the fact that the photos are effectively amended in a database rather than amended directly. So this means that any changes you make to a photo are stored in the database and can be unwound or removed or altered at any time. Effectively, it's non-destructive editing. And for a photographer, it's a very powerful tool. As I say, Apple's Aperture does very much the same thing. However, the difference is Aperture is a Macintosh-only program and also requires quite a powerful Mac to get the best out of it. Lightroom isn't Macintosh-only. It's available on Windows and Mac. And Adobe have designed the software so it's much less power-hungry than Apple's Aperture is. For instance, I was recently on vacation. I had a copy of Lightroom with me, and I was running that on a 5-year-old Macintosh PowerBook 12-inch aluminium machine with an 867MHz processor and 640MB of RAM. Now, that's quite an old machine and not a particularly powerful machine by today's standards. And while Lightroom wasn't exactly massively speedy on it, it ran no problem, and I didn't have any crashes or any fallovers from the software at all. That would not be the case with Apple's Aperture, which wouldn't even load on a machine like that. To go back to the cross-platform thing I was talking about earlier, what Adobe have done with Lightroom is when you buy it, you get a box with a CD in it that actually has both the Windows and the Macintosh versions of the software on the same CD. And what you do is you install it on your chosen hardware platform and then give it the serial number that's included with the box. And the serial number will work with either the Windows or the Mac version. Effectively, while they still have created two different versions of the program, from Adobe's point of view, in terms of how they market or license the program, they don't really care what platform you're running on, whether it be Windows or Mac. In terms of commercial software, this is pretty much the only piece of software I've ever seen that takes this approach. This cross-platform approach can be seen in most of Adobe's other products. You can take a file from Photoshop on a Windows or a Mac machine and move it across to the other platform, and it will open in the other software without any problem. The same goes for all of the other Adobe-developed applications that were included in CS2, and I expect will be much the same for CS3. I don't know for certain that the Macromedia applications that have been incorporated into CS3 will have the same features, because obviously those have come from a different application developer, and I'm not sure whether Adobe will have had time to align the two application sets on each platform yet. But certainly for all the Adobe-created applications like Illustrator, Photoshop, the applications like that, you can expect to take files between Windows and Mac versions without any problem between the different platforms. And this is a boon for cross-platform use of these pieces of software. And regular listeners of Fenestration will know that's something that I very strongly support. Further examples of Adobe's approach to this can be seen by their approach to digital photography. I've already mentioned what Lightroom offers in terms of cross-platform support, but Adobe are also trying to do to raw SLR digital photography what they did to print processing with PDF file. A raw file is a photograph that's been taken by a camera that effectively just contains the literally raw information that the sensor in the camera saw. Effectively, it's just a file that gives you a list of pixel values for each of the pixels in the sensors of the camera. It's not processed in any way, and in order to actually see the picture on this computer screen, it does need to be processed. Now, a camera will ordinarily do this for you. It will apply various levels of sharpening and processing to a picture to allow you to see it, and then will save it to your memory card as a JPEG. However, there are significant advantages to leaving the file in the RAW format. It gives you much more flexibility in terms of how you process the image. And so, professional digital photographers, or anybody who has a camera that can produce files in RAW format, once they have the right software, prefer to use RAW rather than use JPEG. Now, Lightroom is a piece of software that can process these RAW files and work on them. And as I mentioned before, it's non-destructive. But Photoshop's been able to do this for some time as well. The issue becomes the fact that the RAW files need to be processed by the camera before they can actually be viewed. And if you take a RAW file from a camera without processing it and then try and render it on the computer screen, you need to understand exactly how that particular camera deals with those files in order to generate an image. And this has led to a situation where, in order to be able to see a RAW file from a particular type of camera in a piece of software, the piece of software needs to know some information from the manufacturer. So there has been situations in the past, for instance, where you've had a copy of Photoshop and a new Canon digital SLR camera has just come out, and you've not been able to view RAW images from it because you need to wait for Adobe to work with Canon to update their software to allow it to process the images. Obviously, this means that you need to ensure for your workflow, you use various different photography programs, that all of the programs you have support the particular camera type you have. And that's not really an optimal situation, because you're relying on support from the various different camera manufacturers as they update their cameras in order to be able to use them with your software. Recognizing this, Adobe has created a format called DNG, which means digital negative. And this format is about providing a standard format for RAW images. Any camera that supports DNG will produce files that can be read by any DNG-aware application. And, okay, at the moment, most digital camera manufacturers don't subscribe to DNG. They actually still produce their own files. But Adobe has made converters available for RAW files to DNG for various different camera types. And the advantage is, once you convert a file to DNG, you retain all the advantages of the RAW file with also getting the added bonus that the document is then portable to different applications that support the DNG standard. And obviously, as you might expect, Adobe's applications all do. This is very much the way PDF started when it first was released. Not that many manufacturers and software manufacturers supported it, though as time has gone on, it's become extremely prevalent, and I would expect to find DNG to do the same. But what DNG illustrates is, yet again, the mindset of Adobe. What they understand is that by providing a standard that allows files to be moved between Macintosh, Windows, and various other systems and application and hardware types, they actually create something that works better for everybody, and at the same time, of course, gives them a certain market advantage, and that's one of the reasons that they do it. As I said previously, I always encourage and commend anybody who's working cross-platform, because for me, there's nothing more frustrating than having situations where you've got data in one particular type of application or software environment, and you need to get it out to another, and you can't do it without jumping through all sorts of hoops. So I recommend to everybody who's working in a cross-platform environment for Windows and Mac to keep uppermost in the mind that Adobe are one of the market leaders in terms of providing cross-platform software support, not just in terms of doing versions for Mac and for Windows, but also providing a situation where data can move seamlessly between those various different platforms and pieces of software.
That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen at mymac.com. Until the next time.
Hello, Robert Hazelwick here. Today I'd like to talk to you about Miglia's TV Mini HD. Of course, there's been a lot of talk recently about getting content onto your television. Well, this works the other way around. It gets content onto your computer. The TV Mini HD allows you to watch, pause, or record television. And once recorded, you can store that media in iTunes and move it to your iPod or get it back on your TV again with Apple's Apple TV. The TV Mini HD is a device a little bit larger than a pack of cigarettes. It comes with a USB cable, an antenna in case you don't have a cable service provider, and it also comes with Elgato's iTV. Connecting the device is a piece of cake. You take your coax cable, plug it into the back of the unit, run the USB cable out of the back of the unit, and plug it into your Mac computer. If you don't have a cable service provider, that's what the antenna is for. You can connect it via the coax cable that is connected to the antenna. Once connected, you'll need to install the software provided on the CD-ROM inside the box, which includes the Elgato's iTV. Once the software is installed, you just need to do what is called a channel scan. There's a little button on the Elgato iTV setup that actually goes out and searches all the available channels that you would have, either via the antenna or the coax cable that is connected to your cable service. Depending on the area you're in or your cable provider, that could take an extended amount of time. I would say that my initial channel search took approximately 15 to 20 minutes. When I tried to use the antenna, it took less time, but it probably took less time because there are no high-definition terrestrial television broadcast signals in my area. But that's okay because I pay for my digital cable service. So once I connected the ITV to my cable service and did my channel scan, I found that I had approximately 87 channels available to me to watch on the computer. However, because my cable service provider is Comcast, I would say more than half of those 87 channels were encrypted. And even worse, the ones that weren't encrypted were mostly duplicated. In other words, I had NBC and NBC HD, which are broadcasting the same show, just one is in much better quality than the other.
So, needless to say, I was rather disappointed at the lack of channel availability for me to watch. This is not the TV Mini HD's fault, though. This is just a sad fact that there are only so many channels available to me provided by my cable service. One of the great features about this device is the fact that you can actually record or pause TV, very similar to the way you would a TiVo. The advantage you have over a TiVo, however, is the fact that it's already stored on your computer. So if you do want to store it in iTunes, it's a simple click away. Or if you want to move it onto your iPod so you can watch it later, again, you don't have to move it off the TiVo and onto your computer and then onto your iPod. It's already on your computer, so it is one less step. But the TV Mini HD will only allow you to record HD television. It doesn't pick up the other signals that are being broadcast on either terrestrial antenna or coax cable via a cable service provider. Finally, I'd just like to talk a little bit about performance. My first time testing this unit, I used it on my G4 iBook. Most of the available channels performed well, but when I was doing the higher of the high-definition channels, I did see a lot of stutter and a lot of lag. However, when connected to the G5, there was no performance issue whatsoever. So, the Miglia TV Mini HD. It retails for about $230, and up until recently, you could buy it at the Apple Store. That's it for me this week. This has been Robert Hazelrig. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to mymacpodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the mymac.com podcast.